It's a very wet morning here at Box Vicarage, but I'm really pleased that Wiz Slater has come to be with me today and to answer some of the questions I'm going to ask her. So the first question, Wiz, is where did we first meet?
I have had to think a little bit about this, but it was in Hillside House at the Dyson office. I had been in contact with you to ask if you would come and help with our loan industry training, and you said yes. Come and meet me. So we came and you had a cup of tea, I seem to remember.
Of course. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that might have been November.
I have no idea when it was, but you were talking about coming and having a sabbatical to do this. So, yeah.
Our next question is, do you drink tea?
I do, but I've only started drinking tea since I was ordained. I didn't like tea before, and for some reason, I was doing an alpha course and somebody said to me, look, you really should be drinking tea now, you're a vicar. So I tried a cup and it wasn't as bad as I thought. So I do now drink tea, just not all that often.
Okay. And what's your favourite cup of tea?
My mum does a kind of combination between, is it Lady Grey? That's not quite as strong as Earl Grey and something else, but it has to be had with a scone and jam and clotted cream in Devon. It's the only way, really. Tea with a scone, it's got to be.
I went to Devon yesterday and didn't have a scone.
You had tea with no scone?
I had tea with no scone in Devon.
That shouldn't be allowed, really.
I took some gluten-free jam and coconut rings, though, as my penance.
No cream.
No cream, but we did very much enjoy them. How do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I definitely agree that it's not dying. Do I agree that it's sleeping? I think in the conversations I have with people, both inside and outside the church, I'm not even sure it's sleeping. I think it's waking up again. I think people are searching and interested. So I think if it has been asleep, then I think it's waking up. I don't know about the church, that's a different question, but Christianity, I think, is waking up.
Mm. What makes you think that?
I think people are spiritually hungry. I think things I'm reading at the moment, you know, secular books, films, TV, things I'm watching, I've just noticed a lot of interest in the afterlife. There seems to me to be a lot of exploration of what happens to you when you die, and is there any correlation between having lived a good life. So there's a Netflix series at the moment called The Good Place, which I absolutely love. It's brilliant, and it's all about that, what happens when you die. It's a comedy. Recent book I've just read, several books I've read, you know, secular books, and there seems to me to be a lot of questioning about what happens when you die, and to me that is a sign of a kind of spiritual searching, and I think people are open to talking about those things and those questions, and they're open, I think, to hearing about Jesus and heaven, in my experience anyway.
If you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
I would really want to change this tendency for those who work in the church to overwork and burn out, and what feels like a competitive ministry where, when clergy get together, they often talk about who's the busiest, who's the most exhausted, and I would want to change that. Really radically, I would want to change it so that people think far more about rest and about well-being, so that they model something very different to people who aren't in the church. I think clergy especially should model something different, and I think that's hard for them to do at the moment. So I would change what feels like an obsession with working every hour and being on every group and committee and meeting. I would change that.
That's really interesting, because I think there are all sorts of factors which contribute to stressing clergy.
Yeah.
And one of them is to do with the fact that nobody really knows what their job is.
Yeah.
And I read a secular book on stress and change management and coping with time, managing your time.
Yeah.
And it actually had a line in it and said, if you don't know what your job is, you will immediately be hugely stressed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes.
And I think sometimes, I've just been on a conference in Sheffield on leadership, so a number of people from different dioceses. And I think it's even harder when you may define your role by what's happening in your parish and your church and what they need. But then possibly the diocese maybe comes and says, okay, we need you to think about these things. So there can sometimes be, not necessarily a conflict, but an extra layer of burden placed upon clergy when they're doing one thing which is happening in their church, and then somebody says, actually, you need to do this thing and that thing as well. And suddenly your role that you thought you'd managed to define in your own head is huge again.
Do you think there's a difference about how men and women clergy cope with that?
That's a really good question. I'm going to use horrible generalisations, so I apologise. From what I see with curates, young people coming into being ordained, I think young men in particular struggle a lot more with how to work out their job and their role and their family and their commitments at home. Excuse me. And I think they struggle with that probably more than women. I think young men seem to feel the need to prove themselves. And this is real generalisations, but it's what I've observed in some people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a difference. I think women cope, in a very different way. I think in some ways women are better at saying no to things and to people, and I think often women are better at not living up to people's expectation of them, and men I think are more inclined to want to live up to people's expectation of them.
I think it's really complex, but one of the things which was important when I moved here was effectively I used to work a split shift, so I'd work 9 till 3 and 7 till 10.
Yeah.
And now that's still quite a lot of hours if you make that 6 days a week. But but because I had the children to look after when I first arrived in those other slots, people knew that they couldn't ask or expect things in that way.
Yeah.
And I, at the time, it was really hard work.
Yeah.
But I do think it gave me a balance that I needed.
Yeah, I agree. I think often it is the family aspect that makes women more able to say, no, I can't do that because I need to be there at home with the children.
But I was really blessed as well, though, because I came here part-time, which was the rarest job in the world.
Hen's teeth springs to mind.
I did 3 years, 50% with a house.
Yeah.
And in those 3 years, we were able to settle in so that when I went full time, we already had our community network. So if something did go horribly wrong with childcare, there was someone I could go, I need you to come now.
Yeah.
And that would be fine.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, what's unique about the Ministry of Lay Ministers, which some dioceses call readers?
This excites me. I'm really excited by what I see in the lay ministers that I am involved with at the moment. So for me, what's unique for them is that as clergy, as you will know, you very quickly live in a clergy bubble. You know, you spend most of your time with a congregation, with parishioners, doing deanery stuff and clergy type stuff, and you end up in a little vicar bubble. And lay ministers aren't in that bubble. They know what it's like to have a job in, if you excuse the phrase, the real world. I know people would say it doesn't get much more real than church, but they understand better, I think, than clergy, what it's like to work in a more secular job, to understand the pressures of that job, to understand the pressures that people have on them in life generally. And they can bring what they know of Jesus into that. And that, you know, that there's talk about lay ministers bridging the gap between church and the world. And I think whilst clergy can do that, lay ministers are much better placed, and they're much better placed to come in and say, look, all this stuff we're doing on that at church, actually, we need to do something on this, because this is what people are currently concerned about or worried about. I think they can exercise their gifts in ministry in a way that's much less, what's the word, much less constrained, if you like. This idea that clergy can often be jack of all trades, master of none, but as a lay minister, as a lay reader, you can, you know what your gifting is, you can use that and do that, and that's the bit of work that you do in the church. I think they're much freer to be able to use their specific gift without being forced into areas that they're not gifted in, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So what's the best thing for you about working with training lay ministers?
Without a doubt, it is seeing people trying stuff they never thought they would try, for instance, preaching, things they thought they would never be good at, and suddenly discovering that God has given them a gift and they cannot believe it, and it's amazing. So I know you were at our session recently when somebody who'd said, I won't ever want to preach, and I'd said to them, that's fine, but you'll need to do it at least once in your training, and they gave us a 5-minute talk that was brilliant. To see somebody just blossom and flourish is, I love it. I love that. It's definitely the walking alongside people as they discover what God's going to do with them. It's brilliant. Brilliant.
How has your recent illness affected your faith and your ministry?
You do good questions. So I had a benign brain tumour removed 18 months ago, and had two fairly major surgeries in the space of a week because the first surgery didn't go quite to plan. I think that the things that we learn about God that are most enduring come through suffering. So to think that you are possibly going to die fairly soon, I have two young children, a husband, and to have to work that through in terms of the thought of having to leave my children and not see them grow up, and having to get to a point of knowing and absolutely trusting that God loves my children more than I do, and that even if I wasn't with them, he would be. And trusting that, and trusting them to him, and suddenly I was able to go, I am not entirely responsible for my children. I mean, I am, of course, responsible for them. But their well-being in their whole life doesn't entirely rest on me. It rests in Jesus. And I think that was a really freeing thing for me as a parent to have to trust them to Jesus. So that was one thing for my faith that was just brilliant. And I mean, I think the other major thing was the second time I went into theatre, something had gone wrong. It was emergency surgery. It was about midnight, and I was waiting on my own in a little room to go into theatre. And I had the most amazing encounter with Jesus ever. I will never forget it. It was like heaven was right there. And I thought in that moment, if I die now, it's fine, it's absolutely fine. And I now have this just such peace that when the end comes for me, it's fine. I'm going to be in that place. And that there's such assurance in that. That it's a really tiny thing. I used to be terrified of flying. I could never get on a plane. And 2 weeks ago, I got on an aeroplane for the first time in 10 years. And just as I was about to get on, I thought, what worries me about this? What's the worst that can happen? Well, the worst that can happen is you'll die. And I suddenly realised, well, that's okay. I'm not afraid of that anymore. And I got on this plane and I loved the flight and I wasn't afraid. So that was amazing. Those are amazing things. The change to my ministry, I think a couple of things have changed in a good way. My ability now to sit with people who are going through serious illness, potentially terminal illness, people whose loved ones are going through it. My ability to empathise with that, I think, has improved hugely. My worry about saying the wrong thing has disappeared. You know, I think I feel much better equipped now in that situation. That's a good thing. On a less positive note, it has affected my memory quite a lot, and I now struggle sometimes to remember conversations I've had with people, which affects me because I always used to remember everything, and I think it could make people feel like I don't care if I don't remember what they've said to me. I really do care, but my brain seems to be working in a way that means I sometimes don't remember. So that's been a hard adjustment in ministry, really hard for me.
What was the most helpful thing that anybody ministered to you with when you were in that really dark place?
I have an amazing, amazing spiritual director, and she allowed me to face the reality of dying. So most people, when you tell them you have an illness that serious, most people, you end up trying to make them feel better about your illness. So they will say, when we discovered it was benign, it's not cancer, so that's great, isn't it? And you think, yeah, that's great. And it could not be happening at all, which would be even better. So you try and cheer other people up about your thing. And nobody allows you to think about the what ifs. So everybody says, oh, but you'll get better, you'll be fine. Oh, don't think about that, you'll be fine. And my spiritual director was brilliant. She just said, no, you do need to think about what if I die. You do need to go there. It probably won't happen, but you need to at least be a little bit prepared for if it does. So I think she just gave me permission to think about dying, and to have those hard conversations. That was the most helpful thing.
Yeah. The next question is the standard last question, which is, what is your favourite thing, beginning with tea?
So I've been sitting here racking my brains thinking, oh, I love cheese. I can't think of a cheese beginning with tea. So I'm sorry, this is so frivolous, but all I can think of is tonic that goes with gin. So G and tea would be my favourite thing, particularly Fever Tree tonic, which is very posh and very nice.
Have you got a particular brand of Fever Tree? Are you a light Fever Tree girl, elderflower, or just a straight up?
Well, elderflower is okay, but not so much with gin, I think. Just straight up. So Hendrick's gin with cucumber and Fever Tree tonic. Other gins are available.
I was thinking about the fact that, you know, you have Women's Hour and late night Women's Hour, and they're quite different programs.
Okay.
So I was thinking of my imaginary fantasy podcasting series, you know, more Tea Vicar.
Nice, yes.
And then more G and Tea Vicar.
Oh, I like that. Can I come on that one? Yeah, more G and Tea.
Which would probably tackle slightly different issues.
Very different issues. I like the sound of that.
So, who knows? Who knows whether we'll go there?
I think that should be an idea that takes off. Definitely.
I need to say thank you, Wiz. Thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing with us today.
You're welcome.
It's been lovely to have you.
Thank you.